I want you to know that I'd be more than willing, and if anybody else is watching overseas, and I'm sure they are, I'll be glad to meet Abu Nidal on equal terms anywhere in the world. Okay? There's an even deal for him. But I am not willing to have my wife and my four children meet Abu Nidal or his organization on his terms. And I want you to know what was going through my mind. I was about to leave for Tehran. I had already been told by Director Casey that I should be prepared to take my own life. I had already been told that the government of the United States, on an earlier proposal for a trip, might even disavow the fact that I had gone on the trip on an earlier proposal. And we can come back to that at some time if you like. And so having asked for some type of U.S. government protection for my wife and children, and having been denied that, and perhaps for fully legitimate reasons, and if there is a law that prevents the protection of American government employees and their families from people like Abu Nidal, then, gentlemen, please fix it. Because this kid won't be around much longer, as I'm sure you know. But there will be others, if they take activist steps to address the problem of terrorism, who will be threatened. One of the people killed in the Christmas massacre, and I do not wish to overdramatize this, but the Abu Nidal terrorist in Rome who blasted the 11-year-old American Natasha Simpson to her knees, deliberately zeroed in and fired an extra burst at her head, just in case. Gentlemen, I have an 11-year-old daughter. Not perhaps a whole lot different than Natasha Simpson. And so, when Mr. Robinette told me on or about the 10th of May that he could immediately install a security system, I said, please try to keep it to the 8,000 to 8,500. I am, after all, a Marine Lieutenant Colonel, and I live on my salary. And he installed that system. And now let me go to your next question, because I know it's coming and it deserves an answer. I never got a bill. And it is, after all, the answer to your question. It is the answer to your question. You asked me where it came from, and I'm trying to tell you.
I am going to ask you that question, but...
You've already asked me the question. You asked me whether or not the money came from General Secord.
Correct.
I'm getting there.
All right, okay.
Okay. I didn't ask for a bill, and I never received one. I never asked where's the bill until well after it was too late, and I'll cover that. When I didn't get a bill, I basically understood what had happened. And I don't know exactly how it worked out, but I believe that an accommodation was worked between Mr. Robinette and General Secord to make a gift out of that security system that I did not pay for. When I came to the end of my tenure at the NSC, it was, to say the least, a busy time. There were other things to be done besides shredding documents when I left. There was a lot of work to be done, and one of the things that I did was to sit and contemplate the previous 5.5 years of my work. And I am proud of that work. I believe that we accomplished a lot. But there was one thing that just didn't look right. And that was that for the first time in my life, I had accepted something that I hadn't paid for. And even though I honestly believe that the government of the United States should have paid for it, should have put it in, I then picked up the phone and asked for a bill. I got a bill. In fact, I got two of them. I didn't ask that they be backdated, but after all, Mr. Robinette is an old hand in the CIA. All right, the bills came with the old original dates, and I think there was another bill with a later date on it. And then, as I told you yesterday, I was going to tell you the truth, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Well, this is the truth. I did probably the grossest misjudgment that I've made in my life. I then tried to paper over that whole thing by sending two phony documents back to Mr. Robinette. It was not an exercise in good judgment. I don't believe I have any particular monopoly on bad judgment. I think it was a gross error in judgment for this committee to put my home address up on a screen for the whole world to see when I've got 20 security agents guarding my wife, my children, and me right now. But the fact is, I am grateful for that assistance beyond measure, because when you think about what could happen when somebody like that is out to kill you and doesn't care if he takes out your children with you, you run out of options in a big hurry. I ran out of options. I think the government of the United States should have stepped up to it and didn't. Whether it's because of laws or regulations, I don't know. I admit to making a serious, serious judgment error in what I then did to paper it over. And I'm willing to sit here and admit to that. But I'm also suggesting to you, gentlemen, that if it was General Secord who paid the bill, whatever it was, I thought it was $8,000, didn't learn until the hearing started it was more. I also suggest to you that if it was General Secord, first of all, thank you, General Secord. And second of all, you guys ought to write him a check, because the government should have done it to begin with. Thank you, sir.
There's been testimony about use of traveler's checks. I'd like to give you an opportunity to answer or explain that testimony. I take it you have it in mind.
I do have it in mind, counsel, and I appreciate the opportunity. Again, you'll have to indulge me a bit. When I began the covert operation in 1984, in support of the resistance, we had enormous problems trying to solve near-time, real-time, what I call operational problems. The end result of that was that I talked to Director Casey about the difficulties. He had suggested establishing an operational account, and I did so. There were times when that account was down to zero. No money in it. I didn't have any traveler's checks, and I had handed out all the cash. Not to myself, but to others. Under those circumstances, I would use my own money. Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North's paycheck money. His own money that he had earned. And I would use it for an operational expense. I would therefore make a notation in the ledger, spent $250 on going to Atlanta to meet with somebody. And the next time I got cash or traveler's checks, I would use those checks to reimburse myself. Every single penny on the checks that you saw that came to me was used to pay an operational expense on the scene or to reimburse myself. I never took a penny that didn't belong to me. Every single one of those checks. And I would also point out to you, counsel, that you don't have them all, because by my own recognition and memory, there were checks used in 1986, and the ones that you depicted earlier were only 1985. And I used those traveler's checks right up until shortly before I was fired, but only for the purposes that you saw. And I realize that this hearing is a difficult thing. Believe me, gentlemen, it isn't as difficult for you as it is for a guy that's got to come up here and tell the truth. And that's what I'm trying to do. And I want to make it very clear that when you put up things like Park Lane hosiery and you all snicker at it, and you know that I've got a beautiful secretary and the good Lord gave her the gift of beauty, and that people snicker that Ollie North might have been doing a little hanky-panky with his secretary, Ollie North has been loyal to his wife since the day he married her. And the fact is, I went to my best friend and I asked her, did I ever go to Park Lane hosiery? And you know what she told me? Of course you did, you old buffoon. You went there to buy leotards for our two little girls. And the reason I wrote the check at Park Lane hosiery, just like the checks at Giant, is because I was owed my money for what I had spent in pursuing that covert operation. You gentlemen may not agree that we should have been pursuing covert operations at the NSC, but we were. We had an operational account, and we used the money for legitimate purposes within that covert operation. Does that answer your question, sir?
Yes.